For February the 5th, 2016, we talk about PAX South 2016, The Witness, and we ask you which games you regret trading in. Welcome to Level 137. My name is Cole Rouse.
I'm Jala Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. That's right, we're doing it three style this week as we kind of do a truncated show here due to availabilities and stuff. We're lucky that there's a show at all because I'm trailing off of a bad sickness and also overzealously trying to correct for spending time being sick.
So it's a downward spiral.
Yeah, I spent all of Monday night setting up the new computers and the new DBX compressors and all of that. Like, we're gonna have four channels, we're gonna have four guests on here, and I'm finally gonna be able to separate Ben and Dennis.
finally, they've
been in the same swim lane for 4 years now. And it's like, man, I can EQ them and compress them differently. And not only do we not have four guests, but also the VNC servers are not working, and I cannot get into those in screen sharing. So we are back to Ben. You're sharing a swim lane again. Yeah, but oh well,
forever not alone.
To see you got a little buddy on track number guest two.
I've always felt like a guest too.
Well, that's okay, because yeah. You know, like, you did have a buddy this weekend.
That's a good segue.
I know. Well, I was trying.
Should we get right to that? I mean, so that's going to take over the brief section because I don't have a story. And let's get right to that with
the brief,
where we talk about not things that are happening in the world of video games, but that convention that you two went to.
Yahoo! Convention.
It's tangentially related or directly related. Either one.
Yeah, there are games there.
It's video game news. There's new things there and stuff. Mm-hmm. But first, I figure I should let Ben talk because he hasn't been to it before.
That's true. It was, so I didn't really know what to expect going into it, but I've been to similar conventions, kind of. So I've been to Evo before, where they do like fighting and stuff. And so it was part that, but then it was part like video game convention. So it's like a bunch of people are pitching new game ideas. So in that sense, it was kind of similar to the retro video game arcade or expo in Portland.
Yeah.
And but yeah, it was a lot of fun. I didn't know that they were going to be doing Smash tournaments until like I think the Friday before I went, and so that was a lot of fun to watch. So that was cool, and then got to see some new video games, which were interesting. And then I got to go to one talk where it was talking about how to make it in the video game industry. And I'm not exactly trying to do that or anything, but it was interesting to listen to industry insiders for once. So yeah,
nice. Mm-hmm.
And another thing that they do have at PAX South is a whole huge tabletop area and indie tabletop developer area as well, which I actually got to hit up with my crew when we were walking around. So to clarify for listeners, Ben had hopped in for just the Saturday and, you know, cut out to go back to where he lives. But I was there for Saturday and Sunday, so I got to see a little bit more of the convention. And of course, having been last year, I kind of already knew the layout. So, you know, like, I got to do that little PAX treasure hunt thing where you look for QR codes everywhere until you get the little free gift. And it was just like a little, you know, clippy thingy for, like, you know, your keys, but that's fine. I don't care. Yeah. I do it just because I want to do it, not because, you know, they give us great stuff. The QR code treasure hunt thing is a good way to get you to see parts of the convention that you didn't even know existed, because there are so many different things going on in different areas. There's a bunch of different rooms, and, you know, like, there's an AFK room where people just have a quiet time. There's a dance, you know, section, and there's like a video arcade thing with a bunch of, you know, arcade machines all set up and everything. There's a jam session room with all of that. Yeah, there's just stuff everywhere. And compared to last year, which was the first year of PAX, so this makes this the second.
We're speaking specifically about PAX South in San Antonio.
Yeah, PAX South. This one felt substantially larger, both in terms of the booths and the number of attendees. It was way more people than last year, and the convention hall does house everybody, but I was told that they're actually expanding the convention hall this year, so it's going to be even bigger next year. So I went over there with Tama, and we met up with Ben for a little bit on Saturday, but then most of the time we were hanging out with Listener Farmer, and he flew in from Tennessee, so he just came, like, you know, all the way over here expressly for the convention, and he was there all of the days of the convention, so he was there on Friday as well. But there were other listeners who did show up, like Tim and his wife and whatnot, but we were like ships passing in the night. Like, there were people that I knew from Houston, artists and other gamers and stuff, that were there, and I never once saw them. And it's like, if you didn't schedule a meetup somewhere in a specific place at a specific time, and, you know, if you weren't available at that point, you would not have met each other. And basically what happened is that by the time I was back in the available area at the time, you know, when I thought those, that all the people would be around, they were like, sorry, I had to go. So, you know, like, we just didn't end up meeting up with very many people, but that's cool. Yeah. We were the few, the proud and the brave. So,
well, I mean, that seems like something that the network can help do, is arrange a meetup like next time, you know, just anytime two or more of us are gathered together, that shall be considered a meetup. So,
Yeah. So with a little bit more planning next year, I think we can definitely do that. I will definitely be going back next spring or January, whatever, winter, I guess. Texas doesn't have the same kind of weather system
it
everyone
has
else has.
Seasons.
Yeah, it has really, really hot and not as hot.
Yeah,
you're fall and summer.
You're a temperate non-combatant.
Yep. So anyway, yeah, speaking about fall and stuff like that, that's usually when my allergies kick up, but I got a sinus infection because the tree pollen was really high, so if I sound kind of nasally, it's because I got a sinus infection walking around the Riverwalk. But yeah, so talking about the Riverwalk, though, last year there were not nearly the number of meetups and stuff going on with, like, just gamer trivia and a bunch of just, you know, people all doing, like, bar hopping, themed treasure hunt things between all the different bars. Like, Farmer told me he went to this one that was Game of Thrones, where everybody was in a different clan and they had to, like, you know, have a drink with the person from that clan and then, like, get a you know, some kind of badge or something from them, and then they got, like, a prestige badge at the end if they managed to do all the different clans and search these people out from all these different bars on the river. So, you know, different stuff like that was, were things that were going on at all the different areas around PAX as well, because there's so much within walking distance of the convention itself, and all the hotels are right there. So, you know, it's just a really great area. Unfortunately, Twitch's booth didn't seem to have nearly as much going on as they did last year. And Dreadnought, which I played last year, was back again this year. And I didn't go through and play it again, but I did get to sign up for the closed beta that they've got. It looked like a finished game to me last year when I played, but now they're, you know, signing up people for beta. So I don't know. I guess they need some more tweaking. Brawlhalla was also back this year, and the game is free to play now on Steam. And there are more levels and more characters, and the weapons were rebalanced. So that actually really kind of upset Farmer, because he used to like to play with characters that had a hammer, and now the hammer is kind of nerfed. Like, it's slower and it's not like the god uber weapon anymore that it used to be. But I also tried several other different games. Moving Hazard, which is a team-based competitive shooter where you use zombies as your weapons. You can use bombs that cause groups of zombies to frenzy, pheromones to throw them off of your scent, and things like stun grenades to make your enemies easy prey for the zombies. So yeah, you can kill the zombies, but you can also use them against your opponents. It was definitely an alpha, because people were finding bugs even as they were playing. So I'll be waiting. Yeah, so I'll be waiting to see like a cleaner version of this to see how that goes. Another one I played was Alice in Tokyo Wonderland, which is currently on Steam Greenlight if you want to take a look at it. It was developed by two people on the Unreal Engine 4 for PC, Mac, and Linux. It's action, adventure, hack and slash type. The main gimmick is that Alice is a Japanese schoolgirl and enemies are from Alice in Wonderland, but redesigned with a Japanese theme like sumo, Tweedledee, and Tweedledum, Samurai Hatter, and so on. It was all right, but it wasn't anything to really write home about. I mean, like, this is just, you know, another hack and slash game that has this type of a motif to it, if you are interested in said motif. One that I definitely am going to be getting is Night Squad, which is a top-down Bomberman meets Gauntlet for 1 to 8 players on Steam and Xbox One. There are 4v4 Capture the Grail and Last Man Standing modes. When I was playing, it was on Capture the Grail mode. Basically, anyone hit kills everybody unless they have like a shield power-up or something. And other power-ups allow you to run faster or blow yourself up in order to take out opponents around you. I don't really tend to play very many versus games much, but this one is just, you know, lighthearted and silly enough that I wouldn't care. It's kind of like Zero Gear, which is the little kart racer. I don't mind playing that, even though that's versus, because that's just, you know, not like super strong investment and, you know, uber skill. The last thing I played was actually an indie tabletop game. It was called Stupid Fight, and it's supposed to be cropping up on Kickstarter later this year. The cards in the deck include 6 body parts, heads, limbs, and torsos, which you can use to build your guy, along with punches, headbutts, kicks, taunts, dodges, and other types of action cards. And you start the game by flipping through your deck until you find a torso. The order in which everybody finds one is the order in which everybody plays the game.
That's kind of a funny way to do initiative.
Yeah, like, find a torso! Yeah. And then for me, I was just like, is this a torso? Question mark. You know, because it's like little cartoony bodies. So yeah. I didn't even quite recognize what it was on, you know, what was on my card. So I went last. Anyway, once everybody has a torso, you draw 5 cards on your turn. If you have body parts, you can add them to the, you know, your little guy and you put them down. And then once you have the limbs, you can attack when you get an attack card. Like, obviously, if you have a headbutt card and you don't have a head, you can't use that attack yet. But, you know, once you get the proper order of cards, then you can start attacking other people. And your life is the number of cards in your deck. So when you run out of cards, you die. There's actually a surprising level of complexity to it, as there's different types of attacks, like different elements. Like, there's, you know, a fire attack or a water attack, but also like a poison attack and things like that. And then there's also immunities and weaknesses for every different body part and every different torso. So it gets kind of complicated with all the different little icons on the cards. But once you learn how to play the game, I think it would run pretty fast and be like a really easy game to play, like when you're drinking and hanging out with people.
Yeah, but that's always my question about these kind of games, is how quick are, not even just the rounds, but just kind of like from beginning to end, how much of an investment do you have into it?
Yeah, and the thing is that when we were playing this, we were trying to figure out how to play the game, but the dev who was trying to show us how to play it was trying to rush us through, and that's really not the way to get people to be like, oh yeah, I really like your game, you know, like that's not, you know, like he was trying to emphasize how fast it is to play, but it's not fast if you're looking at the dongles on the card going, wait, what does this purple thing mean? Yeah. Hey, what does this little exclamation point say? You know, like, once you know the cards and you're familiar with the game, then yes, it would play very fast. But, I won the game, even though I was last. So, yay!
I wonder how, I don't know, feasible it would be to make a demo version of a card game. Ben, you may know more about this because you're more familiar with that kind of prototyping kind of stuff. But, like, just it seems like showing a game like that in that environment, right, it's just not optimal for getting somebody really on board with what's happening there. So, like, would there be a way to kind of constrict the possibility space, or to like set up hands and then have somebody on hand to like walk you through, like you know, I know that this set of conditions is right here, you know, so you need to do like this or this, and this is like evocative or demonstrative of this thing about this game, so that you get like a nice encapsulated version of it that wasn't just, you know, here's a compromised version of a full round of this game.
I think it's probably really similar to like video game testing, where it's like there's just a whole bunch of bugs with the first round that you go through, and then like after that you fix all those, and then it slowly gets better and better.
I'm less talking about like, you know, play testing a game, and more like actually like demonstrating it, like actually making a
like orchestrating it rather than just letting it be random and then having to explain all the, you know, whatnot about every little contingency.
So
like having a tutorial
a little bit, but like a real real-time in-person tutorial that is meant to kind of like, oh yeah, but that also has like a computerized component to it too.
That's true.
Like, and that, like, that is ingenious because their rule set is so malleable, because, you know, they don't have to depend on, you know, somebody running the game. You know, the app runs the game for you.
Yeah.
Well, definitely, there were some things that were being changed and will change before this comes out on Kickstarter, because he was like, oh yeah, don't pay attention to what that says in that exclamation point special attack thing, because we're changing that to be like this. Okay. And then he's like, oh, but we're selling the prototypes. Well, if you're already telling me about stuff you're changing in your prototype, I don't want to buy your prototype. I want to wait until you have it on Kickstarter. I will buy it when it's on Kickstarter, but I'm not going to buy your prototype, you know? Like, you know, like, I understand you want to get rid of them, but no, I don't want it, you know?
Yeah.
But no, it was really fun. But yeah, like, definitely he needed to work on his sales pitch and how to get us through the game. Like, I wouldn't have mind if it took more than 10 minutes to play, but, you know, don't try to push me to play it within your buzzer limit, right? You know, like, you know. And there actually, I do have to give PAX South credit that they do have a lot of support for the indie tabletop people as much as they do for their indie, you know, video game devs. So that's something that I do like, because they do have like this whole area that's just indie tabletop stuff, and you can just try out all these games and, you know, get to know all these people who are making all of these different types of tabletop games right alongside all of the people who are making the video games that you're interested in. So
I think that goes a long way too. Like, the more you have, I'm saying this about a convention that I've never been to, but it seems intellectually like the more official support you have for these things that are smaller kind of enterprises, the less it becomes, you know, like the less the lines metastasize and the less, you know, you have to deal with bigger and bigger booths kind of taking over this thing that, you know, might make it less about the people who are there.
Yeah. And a cool thing too is that, like, in the tabletop area, you can rent out different tabletop games to try out there if you want to give them a shot and play it when you've got people with you. And the same thing works in, like, there's free play areas for consoles and for PCs, and, you know, including classic consoles, you can rent out space on one of these consoles and play whatever they've got on hand. So nice.
I got to do that too. I was really excited about that. We got to play Halo 2 for a couple of rounds.
So. Cool,
you did that at a PRG as well.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not giving you shit. I just think that's fine.
No.
Yeah.
I know. I have deep nostalgia for that game, so.
Neat.
Yep, and one thing that I really did enjoy was the fact that they did have, like, a jam room for people to make music. They had an arcade area for just, like, the arcade cabinets and just all of that kind of feel. And they just have so many different things going on that are different.
Area too.
Yeah, they did. They have a nap area. They have like the whole.
There's a charity called Take This that does like chill out zones.
Yeah, and they were there. They were representing.
Yeah.
So
the more I read about them, the more I really appreciate what they do.
Oh yeah, and they have like a whole handheld lounge, which is just a bunch of beanbags for people to chill out and play their handheld games on, and whatever. I mean, like, there's a bunch of different stuff that is going on all the time. And then too, Saturday night after Ben left, we ended up going to the concerts, and so I got to see the Double Clicks and Pollen Storm DoubleClicks in particular are my favorites.
Nice. I like Pollen Store.
Yeah. Have you ever heard the DoubleClicks? If not, you should listen.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you would like them.
I'll take it under advisement.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
And that's about all I've got from that. I want to say, though, that Farmer was super awesome. It was wonderful to be able to spend the entire, you know, con experience this time with one of the listeners from the show. Yeah. And so that was really cool. And he said he's going to be coming back next year and he's going to be bringing a bunch of people with him. So,
awesome.
You know, like that's going to be fun. And probably next year I will try to hit it right when the sale goes on and actually buy a 3-day pass this time. So, you know,
yeah.
But, so yeah, so I'll be definitely there next year for anybody who wants to go ahead and plan now to go.
Yeah. I definitely think I'm going to go back again next year as well. That was a lot of fun.
Nice.
Ben, if you need to like crash on somebody's like hotel room floor just so you can just go for more than just a few hours, you totally just need to just say, hey, can I crash on your floor or your couch or whatever?
It's so close to my house. It's only an hour away.
Yeah, I appreciate the sentiment, Ben. I really do.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. This was suggested by Eric, and Dennis put it up earlier today, even though he's not on the air. It says, we've all done it. We've all sacrificed our loved ones for the promise of riches, only to realize that no amount of money could replace what we once had. I don't know why he decided to summarize the movie Click, but there we go.
Whoa, that's a deep pool. A movie that everyone forgot.
Yep, rightfully so. Tonight we mourn and heal together. What console or game do you most regret trading in? What did you trade it in for? And then all the answer stuff. Let's see here. I'm going to ask you, Jala, to go ahead and start us off with Steve.
Steven, there we go. As a young child, with a glimmer in my eyes, I walked into the local Rhino Games with some old NES games I inherited from my older brother. Two of these games were the gold cartridge Legend of Zelda 1 and 2. In exchange for those and many other old games, I acquired True Lies for the SNES. That is not a good game. Oh, you poor boy.
That's great.
Whoops.
True Lies. Oh man, immediately I go and take a look. I need to make sure that that is in the that is in the recommendations for Abject Suffering. Because we got a lot of a lot of mileage off of the Last Action Hero.
Episode. Yeah.
Let me see here. True Lies. This is fascinating. No, it is not. Steven, please go and recommend that for Abject Suffering, because I cannot put stuff in myself. Man, that's that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is rough, man.
Let's see here. Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I've never traded in a game or console. When I feel like I'm done it, I give it to Goodwill. Done with it, I give it to Goodwill. But I do have two regrets. One, I gave away my copy of Remake for the GameCube.
The Resident Evil Remake.
Okay. All right. Thanks. It is one of my favorite games of all time, and it's hard to get over here. The second regret is not a game, but I accidentally gave away a book signed by my favorite author who recently has passed. And I am not ashamed to admit it, but I cried that day.
Oh.
Sorry, dude.
I don't want to like your post, although I usually like responses, because that's just sad.
Yeah.
Tangential note. Apparently, I don't know why I'm promoting Facebook, but apparently they're adding like a whole set of emoticons or whatever to like respond to posts because of that issue. Where it's like, if you're
reporting, I don't want to like it if it's sad.
Yeah, it's like you report an earthquake in Nepal and it's like, I guess I'll like it. Thumbs that seems up, wrong.
Bro. Yeah. I'll holler back. give me your thumbs back. Wow. I mean, that's good. Have they ever brought in the dislike button?
They don't want to do that because it promotes negativity, apparently.
Oh, I thought that they were seriously considering it. I was really looking for the Armageddon. Like, I wanted that to, I just wanted Ragnarok to rain down upon us when they opened it. That would have been fun to watch. But
they're not as cool as Reddit.
yeah, that's really sad. The remake is good. And that's not you guys. That's not what you were sad about. No.
Wait, what?
No. It was a dumb joke that didn't land. Let's see here. Dustin says, I was a serious collector at 15 years old, even more so than now, because back then it took more effort to obtain a new game. Researching gaming magazines for the absolute best game, hours of gaming talk at school, saving allowance or birthday money, collecting change from anywhere I could, convincing parents for a ride to the game store. It wasn't easy, especially with a negative vibe toward gaming back then. Anyway, it was either an electronics boutique or a Funko Land where I lost my virginity. Okay. I gave them my first PS1 and at least 50 games. Most of them were black labels or even long boxes. Lots of accessories like the multi-tab Game Shark, gray and orange Namco guns, Beatmania DJ pad, which was an import, turbo controllers, the works. I traded it all for a PS2 and Gran Turismo 3. Was it worth it at the time? Oh yes, I had to have it. The way that the sleek black vertical PS2 with the blue stand was advertised, DVDs were a new thing. I was on such a high, I didn't realize I'd been played until I was living on my own, missing things from my childhood. 50 games.
I think he's saying that he got fucked on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a new system, but at what cost? Like, I don't know. That is something that, at least now, what happens at the GameStops and whatnot is they have like limited time. Hey, trade in the most recent version of this for like essentially $100 new console. Like trade in your PS3 for, you know, half off of a PS4 or something, as they're trying to boost their used system sales, which makes it a little bit better of a deal. But yeah, like just completely decimating, or not decimating, eliminating your ecosystem to start up a new one. That sucks, especially when you could have played those games on your PS2. I'm so sad for you. Let's see. Jala, what does Paul say?
Paul says, on September 9th, 1995. Like, he freaking knows the date. Wow. All right. Anyway, I waited in line at Babbage's to trade in both my SNES and Genesis and 32X, including Final Fantasy 3, 6, Shadowrun, Genesis, Castlevania Bloodlines, and Joe Montana Football, among others, for a PlayStation, and still had to fork over some college loan money.
That's why he remembers he was in college.
Many years later, I had to sell original Final Fantasy VII and Symphony of the Night completes for diapers. I most regret trading in the SNES, though.
So that's that's kind of funny. Sorry about that cough. I'm not going to edit that out because it's getting increasingly difficult to do. That's, you know, on one hand, you're trading it in for something that your child, this thing that you love more than anything else in the world, desperately needs because it doesn't know how not to shit in them. But I don't know. I can't help but look at that, at least from an outsider's perspective, as just swaddling the kid in your Final Fantasy VII manual so he can shit on it.
Like, wow.
I'm turning this wonderful experience into something for my child to shit on.
I'll take the other opinion and say good on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh gosh.
Yeah, my sister and brother-in-law had to do cloth diapers for a bit because tight money. That's rough. Is rough.
Yeah, so. that is a thankless job.
Yeah.
Ben, what does Sam say?
Sam says, I traded in Demon Souls for the first time. I attempted the Tower of Latria. Mm-hmm. Not to buy something else, but because it was the ultimate rage quit. After Dark Souls happened, I had to buy another copy. Backslid.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that's what has to happen. You have to bounce off of it before you come back. Yeah.
It's like a weird Earth re-entry metaphor. I don't know.
David writes in saying, I sold Earthbound with the strategy guide for $10 at a garage sale. I had played the same amount. Sorry, I had paid the same amount from a video rental store that was going out of business. So I thought, that's just what it was worth. oops. So he not only got a $10 Earthbound, sweet, but he sold it for the exact same amount.
Whoops.
I'm so sorry,
James. This is a really sad post, man.
I know,
yeah, this
right?
is like just so many regrets. Like I thought that Dennis was just being melodramatic in that intro, but yeah, no, he's totally on the.
I like how he asked the question and then doesn't show up for the podcast. He doesn't really sit through what he said.
Yeah. Well, no, he saw the responses and like I don't have room for this today. I'm sorry, guys.
I can't do it today.
Jala, what does Graham say?
Graham says, my biggest trade-in regret would be Jack 2, Jack 3, and Ratchet and Clank Up Your Arsenal. Between the time I sold them and the time I got their HD re-releases on the PS3, I wanted to play them again a number of times, but did not have the means to get them. When I played Jack 2 again in the HD pack, it was like an itch was finally scratched after 7 long years. Well, at least it ended on a happy note. I mean, you got it back, sort of. I mean, not the exact same thing, but, you know, close enough.
Yeah. You know, and you just you had that time to really think about what you appreciate about Jack. And so it was that much sweeter when he was back in your arms.
Right?
Yeah. Huh. So I'm curious, has there been an HD remake of Ratchet and Clank? Like, have they collected those at all?
I have not seen one. That doesn't mean much.
I've not seen one either, but I am also not tracking that game.
Yeah, neither am I. Like, that just seems like something Sony would have done.
Yeah.
Bookmark this for Dennis to answer.
Yep. He is the resident. Huh. Let's see here.
He's the resident, huh?
He's the resident, huh? Sorry, I was trying to keep track of who was
Nathan.
Going to read what. Ben, what does
I'm
Nathan
I'm
going to
read Nathan, who says, the summer after my freshman year of college, I traded in my DS and GameCube, as well as all of their games and peripherals, for an Xbox 360. And a few new games. All of those years playing Pokemon, Smash Bros., and Animal Crossing with my friends boiled down to about $120 trade-in credit at GameStop. Whoops. In the fall, I decided I missed playing Pokemon so much that I traded the 360 for Heart Gold and a DS Lite, which I still have. It's mostly duct tape and wire right now.
I think somebody now might have replaced your DS with duct tape and wire.
The old switcheroo. I was gonna say GameStop's getting awfully aggressive now.
They just relax with the refurbs.
Now I don't trade anything in. I love Steam.
Yay, there's another happy one. Thank you. Two happy people in a row.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yay, or happy endings anyway. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. Huh. Traded the 360 for Heart Gold and a DS Lite. And you know what that is? That's downsizing. That's right sizing is what that is.
Yeah. You know, you get old. You don't need as many controllers around the house. The kids are gone.
It just takes so much power to, you know, to heat the thing. That's where the metaphor breaks down. Sorry. Michael writes in saying, there's a hole in my heart for my original copy of Chrono Trigger. My parents endured a harrowing search to locate it, and the game ended up teaching me a lot about hope in the face of impossible odds. Many years later, I ended up hawking it to get through a tough year post-college in a debt storm. To this day, I wish I had it resting in a picture frame, silently standing as a testament to Chrono and the gang's inspirational tale. Whew, that's some O'Henry shit. You had to sell the thing that gave you hope in order to survive.
Yeah.
I wasn't ready for this today.
I know, right? Give it to the sick people.
Should we have a Chrono Trigger warning on this?
Oh God, you're gonna kill him.
Yep, no. and then Cole died.
Day Cole died.
Oh, and there was much rejoicing. Let's see here. Jala, what does Ryan say?
Ryan says, I got burned by GameStop a long time ago, so I don't trade games a lot. But in a moment of weakness, I traded beautiful Katamari a couple of years ago for credit toward Halo 4, and it still bums me out.
Was that a good Katamari?
I don't know.
No, I'm talking to Ryan.
We'll wait, Ryan.
Yeah, no, just you know what, actually that, like, that joke doesn't work when I can just reply to this and say, hey, is that one of the good ones? I think Beautiful Katamari is actually the 360 one, and it's not regarded as the good one, but still it is a Katamari game that he traded in for Halo 4, which I can, it's weird, but I can imagine a Katamari game having more replay value than a late era Halo game.
To his defense, I've played Katamari on the 360 and it was fun, but I have no idea which Katamari it was.
Oh, yeah. I'm 98% sure, and I have no ambition to Google this. So we're at a standstill. Ben.
That's okay. Someone will correct you.
Every day. Ben, what does Allison say?
Allison says, I regret all the games I've traded in over the years, but the worst of it was trading in my SNES copy of Chrono Trigger, of $50 for $50 to put toward my first PS2 system. Seemed like a good idea at the time. Luckily, my brother was nice enough to buy me another copy of Chrono Trigger for my birthday some years later.
Well, that was nice. At least a happy ending.
Yeah. Yeah, you got your lost buddy back.
Yeah.
What if that was actually Michael's copy and Allison has it?
Oh man. Dragging it back to the darkness,
yeah,
now.
It's a little, it's like Mr. Burns' teddy bear Bobo. And I'm gonna round us out with Eric, who says, dunno if I'm too late, you're not, but lending my Nintendo 64 to a friend and never getting it back. I miss you so much, Perfect Dark, sad frowny face emoticon.
That's big time borrowing and not giving back
the
entire console.
That happened to me. We lent the N64 to a friend of my brother's, and we eventually got something back. We got the system back, but it didn't come with Majora's Mask, Rogue Squadron or Ocarina of Time. So like I have this N64 or GoldenEye. So I have this N64, but all I have is like fucking Micro Machines for it. Yeah, it's a real, oh, and Pokemon Snap, that's fine, but I didn't lend that to him.
So you know, win some, lose some.
Yeah. Well, that's sad. Let's go through our tales of woe. I want to hear yours, Jala.
Okay, so I've sold off a bunch of stuff at varying points, but only when I really wanted something else. For example, I sold my Genesis, Sega CD, and all of the games that I had for that, so I could get Sega Saturn games that I wanted at the time, like Dragon Force, Shining Force 3, and import copies of the Lunar remakes. I wasn't really eaten up about getting rid of the Genesis, but I did end up rebuying copies of the Sega CD games I'd owned later on for cheaper than I ever paid for them, but also in a less awesome condition. Eventually, a friend bought me a Genesis Sega CD console again, and so I ended up making out pretty well, as I still have copies of the games I liked most. Also, all the games I bought with that money are awesome games, and I still have them, and they're still awesome. So, totally don't regret that. I also sold off my GBA, DS, and some other collectible retro games like Chrono Trigger warning, in order to pay for my trip to Japan back in 2009. And I don't regret doing that, though. I think I got like 120 or something like that for Chrono Trigger and some other stuff. So I wasn't eaten up about that because it was just the cartridge. I didn't even have the box.
Yeah.
Anyway, sometimes I do wish I had my GBA back for some of the stuff on there that I really liked, like Shining Force Resurrection of the Dark Dragon, which was a really good remake of the original Shining Force game, and Pokemon Puzzle Challenge. And I might eventually end up buying a GBA again just to get those two games, because most of them, there were a lot of good Game Boy Advance games, but you know, there's only like a few that I really want to go back and play, but also play portably. I don't really want to play emulator, so that's it. Like, no, I'm not really bummed out about it. Not that that's dreadfully surprising. I don't exactly hold a lot of depression around.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, losing your Game Boy Advance sucks. That's a really good system. Like, which one was it? Like the regular candy bar one, or was it an SP?
I had the candy bar one, but then I ended up getting an SP at some point. So
was that the one you traded in?
I traded in one for the other, and then traded in that one too at some point.
Yeah.
Like, they all just cycled through because, you know, what happens with me is the handheld systems don't get used for a while, and then they just collect dust somewhere, and I'm like, I'm never playing this! Even if there's some gun games, I'm not playing this, and then, you know, that's when I get rid of it, and then I'm like, you know, now I want to play it, you know, so.
I don't run into that problem because as long as it's on a shelf, it's safe. Right, like it doesn't matter how much. Like I could have a worm riddled raccoon corpse, and if it was on a shelf, it'd be like, oh well, I don't know. There's room for it.
Oh no. See, I routinely go through all of my stuff, and I purge constantly. So yeah. I'm usually giving stuff to people. Like even if it's something that I've had for a really long time, if I know somebody else really would enjoy this thing that I have, I will end up giving it to them over time, and that's actually a trait that I got from my dad. My dad does the same thing. My mom does the same thing. My whole family just kind of does this kind of process regularly. So that means if I've got something and it's not being used for a length of time, it goes out the door. Like it's gone. So the fact that I still have some of my old game systems, I do still retro game with those, because if I didn't, they would be gone.
Yeah, it's convenient that I started switching to mostly digital game purchases right around the time I started running out of bookshelf space. Like if I had to start deciding, like, hey, where does the overflow go? That would be pretty gnarly.
It would be like Cole's equivalent of Sophie's Choice.
Not really, because like, you know, there are definitely games that I have that like, oh, I own a Steam copy of this, so it doesn't make any sense for me to have this copy of like Darksiders 2 because like I already own it. But like,
what made you buy that twice, by the way?
It was in a bundle.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's legitimate.
Yeah, like it came along with something I wanted more. But like I've got it, and so all right, whatever. But yeah, like I don't know, like there's not enough motivation for me to do it because I know how little I would get if I took it to a place like to sell it. I know how little I would get if I put all these in a lot. And it was just like on Craigslist, like, hey, you know, here, come get this. You have to buy them all at once. It's fine. But yeah, so like between the hassle of even taking it to a Goodwill and like the emotional like hassle of, let's say, all right, I'm going to take this to a Goodwill, even though it still works, and I could just like ship it to a listener, but shipping it to a listener is a hassle too. So I don't know. It's just going to stick
Cole,
around.
You really just like overthink the hell out of these things, you know?
Have you met me?
Call anxiety.
Oh yeah. Man. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, like it's on a shelf and it's not hurting anybody.
That's important. Don't hurt anybody with things on your shelves, Cole.
Yeah.
And rotting raccoon corpses either.
No, I took care of that problem. It's fine.
Okay.
The social worker was you know pretty generous about guiding me through that. Ben, how about you?
I've got a support net, don't worry about it. I think the only experience I've had trading in a game is I traded in Advent Rising and then paid some money on top of that to get Grand Theft Auto San Andreas, I believe. So I'm pretty okay with that trade. But I also learned from that experience, like, wow, like they do not give you a lot of money, or they do not give you the same amount of money that you pay for a game when you trade it in. So don't think I'm going to do that again. So I kind of am the same way as Jala, where I will usually give games to friends if I think that they might enjoy it. Or, because I usually will always buy a copy of the game, and I think I'm starting to switch over to digital now too. But if I have a copy of a game, I'll keep it before I'll trade it in and just give it to a friend before I'll trade it in. So,
How about this? Just because you reminded me of that. If you, want to receive one game from me, you don't get to choose which one it is, but if you just want to get a game that is signed, what I want you to do is write a review on iTunes, take a screen capture of the composition field, like, hey, this is my review, I sent it in, send it to me, and when I see it go through on the store, on the iTunes store, I can contact you, get your address, and I will send you this as long as you are in the United States.
I'll double down on that as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like you'll send one too?
Yeah. Well, I mean, not to the same person, but I can, you know, if two people do it, I can send it to the second person or whatever. But
So this is straight up bribery. What's up?
Yeah, but the console is limited to PS3, possibly PS4, but mostly PS3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the rules for that are write a review on iTunes, take a screen capture of you writing the review, and then send that in to the contact form, the usual channels. And once I see a post, we will talk about it, and I will send you a random signed PS or a random signed game, non-specific. And Ben, you may get one from Ben as well.
Yeah.
Not as well, but you may get one from Ben instead.
Yeah.
So let's commit to a total of five.
You got to decide whose signature you want.
Well, no, we're going to surprise them with that too.
I'll ship it to you so that you can sign it, and then you can. Yeah,
this is getting complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like a traveling salesman problem.
Yeah. Well, there's your happy ending to that sad, sad multiplayer. It's called incentivizing calls, yeah. Not bribing. Incentivizing.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't even need to be a good review, right? It could be any review.
You didn't specify.
We just want your opinion.
It's gonna be like awkward. Like if you give us a 1-star review, and like these fucking assholes, it's gonna be real awkward when I like talk to you. Like, I don't know why you're doing this, but hey, I've got to honor it. All I said was a review. Sure. Yeah.
That's how you get Superman for the N64.
Oh man. But
is
yeah,
that like the go... suffering.
No, yeah, anyway. We did. Yeah, we did do an abject suffering on that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But yeah, Advent Rising for San Andreas. That's not terrible.
Yeah.
At least you get rid of Advent Rising.
Yeah. I looked it up because I couldn't remember the name of the game, but it got a 9 out of 10 on Steam, apparently. But I got it as a gift, so I wasn't invested in it. That's why I was so willing to trade it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll do mine. In a fit of pique after I accidentally erased my save game on The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past by knocking into the system. I was like on the 7th dungeon right near the end, and then just lost all my progress because that can happen with SNES games. If you jostle the system, your game gets erased. So I was like, fuck it. I have nothing left to do with this game, so I'm going to trade it in. I still wish I had that, even though I own it in like 5 other forms.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my big one. Other than that, I am kind of upset that I traded away Parappa the Rapper. It is not, impossible to get a hold of. It's like $30 on Amazon for like a disc only copy, but like $30 is a little bit too much to pay. So like, I guess
it is greater than $20.
Yes, so. It is. So I'd have to think about it for a while. Yeah, so I'm not too. I wasn't too jazzed about that. I liked that game. I forget what I traded it away for, but 8 years of working at a GameStop taught me. You know what? There are times when you can trade stuff in. Like sometimes they would do like a trade in 3 games and get $10 on top of your extra 30% for your Game Informer like Edge card kind of stuff. Like you could extreme coupon the fuck out of that stuff, as long as it wasn't like an old sports game. But yeah. Little bit of a bummer.
Like most of the time when I was selling my stuff, it was like on eBay before they totally screwed it up to where it's not as easy to make good money on there anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I ran like an eBay and an Amazon store, and I sold a lot of stuff for a good prices. Mm-hmm. But then the rules changed and I can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
And sell my stuff at the most opportune moment to all those crazy collector people. Damn.
Yeah. You know, I realize I'm coming from a place of extreme privilege when I say, hey, don't trade your stuff in, especially if it's like for cash and you need to get diapers for your kid. I hope you understand I was just being funny when I said that. But, I've never been in a situation where the $10 I would have gotten for that brand new game traded in for cash would have made that much of a difference for me.
Yeah, for real. If you have a $10 diaper dilemma, just send it and we'll send you a game, I think.
Yeah. That's a little bit harder to prove. We need like bank statements,
photo of the kid without a diaper.
No, please don't do that. But thank you everybody for responding in to that. That was nice and fun. If you want to participate in future episodes like this or sections like this, sorry, I'm realizing I'm much more sick than I thought I was. You can check our Facebook page at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast on Tuesday afternoons.
The grind.
Now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past week or so. Jala, since you have not been here in a little bit, I'm going to throw to you first.
Okay, I got a lot of stuff to talk about, so let's get to it. All right, first thing is Sniper Elite 3. I have played through the entire main campaign with Sam Bear. And it plays well with some really fun blow up all the things parts, as well as some sneaky snipey things. And there But anyway, like it was, there were a lot of good maps and it was pretty fun. And as much as there's supposed to be a plot in these, the main idea was like go steal the plans for the super tank Rat and then blow it up and kill Valen. Like there's supposed to be a plot, but you kind of like forget all about that because there's not really all that much interjection into the actual gameplay, really, of course. It's mostly just like, hey, I want to shoot dudes. And that's about it.
So these games, they it looks like they sell gangbusters on Steam. Like they're kind of always featured in sales, and they kind of climb on the charts when they are. How kind of rigorous is the sniping element of this? By which I mean, is this like a simulation thing where you have to account for like drift for wind and for like, you know, like sight height and all those things? Or is this more of like, we're going to give you the normal kind of like hit scan, you press a button and somebody dies, but put you in kind of sniper-esque situations?
Is it like Halo 1 or Halo 5?
Well, I don't really know too much about whether or not there's actually bullet drift or any of that, but from what I've noticed, depending upon what level of difficulty you put it at, you can either be, you know, just breezing through it and just like, I'm not even going to snipe everybody. I'm just going to shoot everybody in the face with this machine gun. Like you can do that if you want to, and it's fine. Like there's ways to play through the level. Of course, there's like endless amounts of bad guys. So if you do that too much and don't try to like run away, sometimes you still get ganked either way. But, you know, like there's definitely a feeling of satisfaction when you go through and you actually do successfully snipe everybody the way you're supposed to and take out all the different targets and bonus targets and whatever.
Yeah. So I guess when I ask that question, have you played Call of Duty 4?
No.
Okay.
I have not. So I can't compare it to a Call of Duty because I have not played a Call of Duty.
Yeah. There's one specific mission in the campaign where it's like one shot, one kill. And it's just like this sniping puzzle where you have to like hold your breath and like watch the wind and check and make sure that you are leading your shot correctly against the wind and kind of like accounting for the Coriolis effect and all this kind of stuff. And when I hear Sniper Elite, what I think of is like a game of that. And when I hear Sniper Elite co-op, I think like you have somebody who's going to be a spotter, which just means I am picturing an entirely different game than what this is.
No. It doesn't play like that. You do have the ability to like hold your breath to make your shots, and that does definitely make it easier, but there's nothing so complicated as what you're talking about insofar as, you know, how you snipe. When you're playing co-op through the campaign, it just basically means that you guys can split off into two different directions and take it from two sides and, you know, take down different guys at different areas, or one guy can be a distraction or whatever, you know, like there, you can hit different points. You can work together in tandem around a specific goal. I mean, whatever best works for the particular map you're on, but there were a lot of interesting maps that had some cool challenges. And like I said, I mean, after you'd finished a particularly difficult part, there was just like a point where, you know, you've got reinforcements in and you can just like, you know, and you're right next to like infinite ammo supply. And then like they reward you by letting you just shoot the fuck out of like everybody on the screen. And it's cool. Like, you know, you've got reinforcements. You can just shoot everybody now instead of having to be patient. So, you know, that was kind of cool that they had those little moments of like release in the middle of it rather than having to control and time and, you know, always watch everything. But overall, like, it was a really fun game. It played through pretty quick. I want to say it was about an hour per each of the maps that we were on. I think 8 maps total or something like that. The funny thing to me was the voice acting, because there's totally deadpan execution of super cheesy lines. And the one that got Sam that made him, like, lose it was, "We're the same, you and I," says the Nazi to the sniper, who gets upset and is like, "We're not the same." But hurt, you know.
I thought that was just like a straight read of the line, but you were doing an interpretation. it was like a different version of like "I see," said the blind man to his deaf wife. Like,
yeah,
you're the same. "You and I," said the Nazi to the sniper.
Yeah, well. The main character does have a super deep and gravelly macho man voice, so it's awesome. So we still have to play through the DLC, which is of course Kill Hitler and Save Churchill, part 1 through 3. So you know, we have that to play, but we also picked up Sniper Elite Zombie Army Trilogy, which we're gonna play after that. And that's basically what it looks like is Left 4 Dead, but with increased emphasis on like you have to try to get headshots and stuff like that. So we're going to play through that eventually too, but first we have to finish the DLC on Sniper Elite 3. So it was a lot of fun, and I definitely would go back and go through Sniper Elite 2, because remember, once upon a time I told you that I played that game for about 5 minutes until I was wandering in an area that I wasn't supposed to go to yet, broke the game, fell through the geometry, and it ended up autosaving. And then I just stopped at that point. But like, I wouldn't mind going back through that game with somebody, you know, and not accidentally wander into that area I wasn't supposed to go to.
That would be great if the way to beat the game was finish the program that the programmer started to write.
Some magic circle shit, yeah.
Right. So that was Sniper Elite 3. Anything else that you have to ask about that?
No, I'm happy you're having fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. And, you know, a different type of game than some of the other random stuff I usually play. So, speaking of random other stuff I usually play, I also played a game called Soul Gambler. And it's a short indie game that's about 1.5 hours or so. And you play a guy named Faust, who is an accountant and leads a boring and lonely life. And you can make a pact with a demon and use up parts of your soul to make wishes come true. And the art style is set up like a graphic novel, which, you know, since I'm a comic artist, among other things, I really enjoy. It's enjoyable enough that I went through and 100%ed it. You actually have stats in this game, even though it plays mostly like a visual novel. You've got health, manipulation, intelligence, and charisma, which impacts how parts of the story play out. But ultimately, you are on rails for the game. Like, certain things automatically push you towards this one ending point, you know? Like, I tried to fight the system to see if it would let me have an ending where you didn't form a pact and kept your soul intact, but that part is completely inevitable. Like, they force you to. So that was unfortunate, because, you know, like, I always
literally makes you do it.
Yes, absolutely. And so, you know, they will like make you do it and, you know, force you to slit your hand and make this pact with this devil or whatever.
Is the devil in this game represented as a less busty Jessica Rabbit with pure porcelain white skin?
That's actually not the devil character, although you think that's the devil character, but it's not the character. She is basically your advisor type person, who also has her own like reasons for looking like that, even which are explained in the game. Each of the endings reveals a little bit more of the story, and some things are left mostly unexplained, but I don't feel that it's to the detriment of the game, as it allows the story to progress steadily without slow up to, like, you know, sit here and explain the minutiae. So overall, it was really fun. I would say, you know, if it was on a sale or so, I don't know how much it costs normally, but like, I got it for $2 or $3 on sale. So
on which platform?
Steam.
Okay.
So like, if it goes on sale on Steam sometime, it's like a short game you can play through. If you like graphic novel-y type things and visual novel-y type things, then you'll probably enjoy this. Yeah. So that's another one I played. Any questions?
Oh, Danganronpa is coming out next week, I think. On
Yay!
Steam. Yeah. That's not a question. That's just me following up on
a statement.
Visual novels. Yes.
That's okay. I have another visual novel thingy I can talk about.
Go for it.
Okay. So it's called Journal. It's another hour and a half or so. It's basically a young girl's journal, which is blank when she wakes up one day and she doesn't know what happened. And as you move through the game, you uncover what happened to the journal over the course of 5 days, interacting with the people in your life and making decisions about what to do in difficult situations. I don't really want to say much about the story, because the whole purpose of the game is to uncover the situation surrounding the protagonist. But I will say that it has a depressing ending. So although it was interesting, I needed cheering up afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend it all the same because it's concise and has a lot of insight. Just be aware that at the end of the game, it's going to be depressing and it will punch you in the gut.
Yeah.
So that's another one. And since I can't really say much about it because it's so short, like...
just like everything would give away.
You might want to look up this game and try it out. It's kind of, you know, interesting. So, yeah.
Journal.
Yeah, journal. And then...
How are you coming across these visual novel things on Steam? Is it recommending them to you?
Randomly. I'm clicking through stuff and I find them in places and I just pick them up and say, hey, that looks cool.
I
peruse sales and I just see them and I say, what is this thing? And I click on it.
Yeah, I just pictured you waking up like some mornings and you just have a slip of paper in your hand with just journal written on it and you're like, okay, I guess I got to play this now.
No. Actually, I've got a whole slew of games that I do have to play that I was gifted that I needed to go and finish because I was given these games. And actually, that was another game I played. I played a game that was gifted to me by James Robinson, listener James Robinson. It's called Shelter. And it's another little short indie game where you play a mother badger trying to feed her babies and navigate through levels filled with things like hawks, forest fires, raging rivers, and so on that are all designed to kill you and your offspring.
So, is this like a side scrolling thing? Is it like top down to
no,
star?
It's like over the shoulder, you know, like three dimensional type game.
Huh.
It's interesting because the graphics on it are kind of blocky and simplified shapes, but with muted pastel patterns on them. So it's kind of interesting looking just because it's not what you would necessarily imagine when you hear a game about mother badgers, you know? But yeah. So I do have to say this. James gave me this as well as a cooking game. And so between the two, it just felt like, hey, you're a girl, so take care of things and get back in the kitchen and make me a sandwich. I'm kidding. But, you know,
like
James is totally not like that. He is super, super cool and probably didn't even realize that link. But like, I get game about Mother Badger. I get game of like cook, serve, delicious. And I'm like, was the theme much? Like, okay.
Time to beat him up in Brawlhalla.
Right, James, you and me,
show
bud.
You.
Yeah, that's okay. I think I killed him the last time we were playing Magicka, like, quite enough. So anyway, I played through this game, and it's also depressing.
The whole game
is engineered to kill you, and from what I've seen on the net, there is no way for you to live. You just watch all of your offspring die one by one while they cry for you with these puppy-like mules, and then you get injured and finally eaten by a hawk in a big open field where there's nowhere for you to go. And so it's super depressing. So I was just like, when I was playing the game, I was just like, well, if I can make it out of this game with one baby, I'm cool. And then the baby was growing and almost as big as me. And then I got to the end of the last level. And then it was just depressing. Mm. So it actually reminds me of the mobile game, The Mammoth, A Cave Painting, which is free. Because it's essentially the same premise, only you're a mother mammoth with some babies and you're separated from your herd. I think everybody dies in that one too, but it's even shorter than Shelter. So it also has another unique aesthetic to it. So I'd recommend going and looking up The Mammoth, A Cave Painting. So it was actually, the Mammoth was created in 3 days at a game jam by In Between Games, which is a studio made of three former devs from Jaeger who'd worked on Dead Island 2. And, you know, Jaeger are the people who are doing Dreadnought. So,
yeah. And also did
Spec Ops Line.
Did Spec Ops.
Yep. So, there's some links in The Mammoth, A Cave Painting to that. And there are some links between Mammoth and Shelter. So if those things interest you, I would recommend looking up both of those two things. So.
Huh. Well, we have a little bit more time for you here. So you said you played the Beginner's Guide.
Yeah, I did. I played the Beginner's Guide. That is super masturbatory. I mean, like, super masturbatory. That's... Damn, man. Like, I'm just sitting here, and I'm just, like, putting my chin in my hand, like, okay. Right.
So I do want to say I want to play this game and I haven't played it yet.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. Like, I'm not going to say anything that's going to spoil it for you. I just want to say it has some valid points, but I wasn't depressed the way that you had mentioned being Cole.
No, I was gutted.
No, not me. And I think it's just because, like, the way that I look at the things that I make, because this is a game about creating things, right? Mm-hmm. The way that I look at things that I make is not the same as this person in this game. And so I can understand parts of it and relate to part of it, but overall, like, I'm not just like, oh, my life, it's terrible. Like, I'm not like that at the end of it. I'm just like, man, that guy's depressing and he needs somebody to help him. He is a sad man.
Are you talking, man, I can't ask this
all
question.
Of them, everything.
Okay. I was going to say, like.
No, I was glad I played the game. And like I said, it does have some valid points, and the way that the game interacts with you, it's not just you interacting with the game, it's the game interacting with you, but the way that works is interesting, and I enjoyed the experience of it, but I wasn't, like, blown away, like, man, this is the best game of the year. So, yeah. I'm like, okay, I mean, that's cool. I'm glad I played it.
Okay, so here's my question. I'm going to put this to both of you. In Gone Home, which of the kind of, like, storylines kind of spoke to you the most? And by spoke to you, because I am the emotional wreck that I am, means like either made you cry or just kind of like, oh gosh, like just kind of cut you deep. Like which of those?
What are the options with it? Like the parents and the sister?
Yeah. So I would say, there's the sister, and that one kind of almost doesn't count. It can count, but it's kind of the main thrust, and like that, trust me, when I went to that attic, I was like, oh God, they did it. They finally did it. But no, I just, so, like the parents' relationship, the mom's, kind of alienation, and then like the dad's creative dissatisfaction and like the dad's relationship with his dad, like which one of those like really hit you the hardest?
To be honest, like, I didn't even retain much of, like, all of the rest of that, because I'm like, yeah, you know, my family's got some problems, too. And, like, I was more interested in the sister and what happened with that, the main thrust of the story, than I was any of the little sidelights. I'm just like, okay, that's interesting that, you know, I see where all of the pieces are fitting in, but I wasn't particularly emotionally, you know, attached to any of the rest of it.
Right.
Just the main thrust.
I'll kind of second that opinion too, where I think I'm not the best player for Gone Home because I do not read everything. And that's a game where like the enjoyment of it comes out of like how much you look into the details of the game, you know?
Well, yeah. The thing is I actually do read all the stuff and I look at all the things and I poke around in all the corners, but I still was just like, yeah, I mean, you know, everybody's got something, you know, like, you know. But so, I mean, yeah, I was really more empathetic towards the sister than anything else and Gone Home.
Yeah, likewise.
So I resonated most with the dad and his kind of story of like basically creative failure. And like he spent his life writing these books and had to like sell out to write VCR reviews. And then he had this kind of like late career revival as people discovered his work. And then just kind of like the, you know, this is a minor spoiler for a thing nobody remembers about the game, but there's a letter that you find like hidden away in a box of like unsold copies of the books that is like, hey, it's from the dad's dad to the dad saying, I don't know why you write this garbage. You should really be spending, you know, your time on something more worthwhile, et cetera, et cetera. And then later on, when you find out that there's like some level of vindication, you know, like where he becomes kind of the genre writer, I was just kind of like that just like got me. And then, you know, if you go and listen to the bonus level that we did with Zach, Bob and Gary, all of us kind of like hit on that, maybe because we are all, you know, men of a certain age in creative fields, you know, to a certain extent. I'm not going to say that you don't work in a creative field, Ben, because you absolutely do, but like, you know, more kind of like, you know, in an emotional realm, I guess.
There are rails in that field. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so like we felt that pretty deeply, and I kind of wonder if all of us, you know, the four of us who were in the recording session share some kind of fundamental insecurity, you know, like Gary really liked the beginner's guide, as did I as well. And, you know, I believe, if I remember correctly, Zach did as well. If there is just something in you that makes you kind of like predisposed to really be fascinated with the way that game turns.
Well, you see, I can totally understand, given, you know, what you've just said about Gone Home, that all of you guys would absolutely love it. And I'm not saying that it's like not a good thing. It's just that it didn't resonate the same to the same degree that mm-hmm. it did with you guys. And I guess the reason why is because since I'm a female who was often told that I couldn't do it because I was female, because I was short, because I was have scoliosis, because of whatever, like, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't do that. And my attitude was always like, all right, let me show you.
Yeah.
Let me show you what I can do. Like, all right, middle fingers, what's up? You know, like, yeah. All right, you say I can't be a painter? Sure. You know, like, whatever, you know, like that was my whole response and my whole attitude towards all of that. So, like, mm-hmm. you know, the whole subject of validation, like, to be honest, you know, visual art, the stuff that I do with my visual art, not so many people give a crap about that as they do the podcasting element and the whatnot, because that's in their ear as they go to work and yeah. whatever. So, I mean, like, you reach a broader audience with audio medium. I don't work in audio medium, so I don't get yeah. that, you know, validation from that. I get the validation from, you know, people hear me and say, hey, yeah. we kind of think you talk about things and they're funny or whatever.
Yeah. yeah.
So, you know, so I mean, like, you know, I have the unique situation of, you know, the podcasting is where I get validation. And meanwhile, all of the stuff that I put my big, big, big heart and soul and all of my mm-hmm. creative juices towards, that doesn't get validated.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just the same thing that's been for the rest of my life, where I'm like, you know what? Fuck all of you guys. I'm going to do it anyway. And it's going to yeah. be freaking awesome. And, you know, I just continue to be bouncy off in my corner doing my thing. So, yeah. you know, like it's just the attitude that I present to the world in response to the lack or the need or the whatever it is that, you know, is driving, the emotional resonance with the beginner's guide, it's just, it's different than the wavelength I'm on, you yeah. know?
So that's kind of a weird situation, because with something as kind of like bare and, you know, I just, with something that is bare and is entirely made up of a voice as that one is, you know, it kind of gives me pause to recommend it as, you know, I feel a little bit bad for saying, oh my gosh, this is one of the best things I played in 2015. Not because I didn't firmly believe it myself, but because, you know, what you're saying right now, you know, this isn't the first contrary opinion I've heard about the beginner's guide. And it's like, whoa, my world is shattered, even though that's what it might sound like. But, it's giving me pause about recommending it, you know, as like, hey, you need to play this. Maybe because it does kind of like speak to me as somebody who came from a decidedly different, you know, place and point of view than you do, John.
Well, yeah. I would definitely still recommend this game. Like, don't get me wrong. Just because I'm on a different wavelength and it doesn't make me sob my eyes out at the mm-hmm. end of it doesn't mean that I didn't enjoy the experience and, you know, the brain massage that it was doing or mm-hmm. what have you, you know, because it is a very introspective game. And If the person who is listening does not like introspective games mm-hmm. or, you know, is not someone who has any kind of resonance whatsoever with anything creative at all, then, okay, maybe they won't get so much out of this game. But if they have, you know, most people are somewhat introspective and do something within which, you know, within their field that involves generating something new. So there's going to be a level at which this game will strike, you know, it hit home somewhere with that person. Even if it's not all of the lights are green and it's just a few of them are yeah. green, I would still recommend it just because it is a unique and beautiful snowflake all on its own.
Jala, I don't know why you're saying I have bad taste in games. That's really uncalled for.
Somebody had to say it.
Well, I don't know, man. Between this and To the Moon, no.
You're on thin fucking ice, Ross. Huh.
No, I will go back and play that one eventually. I'm not actually hating on that game, by the way.
You gotta play it before the sequel's out.
Right.
Yeah.
When is the sequel out?
It's 2018 or something like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm fine.
Huh. Yeah, Ben, I'm gonna be really curious to hear what you have to say about it.
I'll be interested to play it whenever it goes on sale.
what's your Steam name?
Merkalizer, aren't you?
What a personal question. Yeah, I think it's Merkalizer.
you're making me uncomfortable, Cole. Okay, yeah, no, that's fine. Don't worry.
Missed opportunity. Should have been Merkill.
Well, you go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, between Merkalizer and Merkill. Ben, I want to hear what you've been playing because it's probably going to overlap with what I've been playing.
Yeah, so I think we're going to call this one a co-op. But yeah.
Tag team.
First up is The Witness. I am almost done with the game, I'm not finished with it yet.
Okay. I've played about 4 hours of it, and I imagine our approaches have been very different based on that.
Okay.
So how much time have you put into it?
I'll pick it up for maybe 15 or 20 minutes. I mean, I think the first day I played it was probably the best day of playing it, just because learning the rules of the game was a lot of fun, I feel like. Mm-hmm. But then once you get it, you figure out the pattern of the game, it's not as enjoyable, maybe. I mean, it's still fun, but it's just a normal puzzle game after a certain point, I think. But albeit a very clever puzzle game for one person to have produced, although I think he had a team of people actually. But anyway, so I guess in addition to playing it this last week, I also watched a coworker did a stream of playing the game for the first time. So I really enjoyed watching somebody figure out the puzzles and figure out the language of the game.
Oh, it's so. Like the Portal effect. You like watching people play Portal.
Yeah, yeah. So let's see. So Cole, you've played it for 4 hours. What what patterns have you figured out, I guess?
Just kind of like the devices that they show you?
Yeah, without explicitly saying what the pattern is.
Yeah, because I haven't played it yet, and I will be.
Yeah. So, let me explain a little bit about my approach, because this game has kind of resisted the way that I would normally kind of take something like this on, because you think, like, okay, this is going to be a very difficult puzzle game, so I mm-hmm. need to kind of attack it with this posture of kind of just zealous, you know, forward momentum, right? Like, I just need to plunge into it and, you know, dive into the resistance and just kind of see where I end up, right?
You're trying to Dark Souls it?
Well, I tried, like, that first day, and I don't think I made as much progress as you did. Not that first day, because I'd spoken briefly about it, on last week's episode, but like when I really began it in earnest after I kind of learned about, like, hey, hit these dots that are in the path, or you need to separate these the black squares and the white squares.
Don't
what? No, but like that's
those are spoilers of the game.
No, it's not. Like, that's like it, right there in the first
spoilers.
It's like right there in the first like 10 minutes. It's like one of the first puzzles it shows to you.
Okay.
He will allow it this one time. You better watch it, Cole.
But it's not just like navigating mazes, because that wouldn't be hard. Like, you know, like every intersection is a different kind of possibility. It opens up the possibility space for what you need to do. And so, like, trying to solve these by rote is not going to make you, you know, it's not going to get you any progress, because, like, I don't know how to do the math of, like, how long it would take to brute force these, because ultimately you are just still just kind of like tracing lines out, and there are only a certain number of things that you can do, mm-hmm. you know, like moves you can make on these boards. But, like, the right way to do this is to pay attention. And so, like, just if we're talking about like bigger patterns or whatever, my first big breakthrough, and this is pretty obvious, and it's something that I like to do, you know, this game has DNA from Myst, and I consider Myst to be a game about paying attention. And so, you know, realizing that, the clues about what are, you know, about what you need to do are hidden in the environment in ways that are sometimes not on kind of either not on the critical path or not on the way that you would normally look at these things from inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the different kind of zones or the different kind of levels, for lack of a better, kind of explanation. The moment I realized that, I realized, okay, like, this is just a way for me to enter the answer that I found elsewhere in a lot of different cases.
Yep.
Right. And so once I realized that, I realized it's less about like running and finding the panels, but looking for familiar patterns in the environment that that kind of like evoke the patterns of the panels, and recognizing when those are going to point to a place where I can kind of enter the answer into it. And so the thing is, like, you can't just like run around and say, hey, is that a grid? Maybe that's a dot. Maybe there's a line there. Like, you can't just do that. And so the reason I've kind of like pumped the brakes, this isn't a game that's a project to me. If I tried to do that, I would probably be really frustrated and bounce off of it. But what I've been doing is I've been going around and looking for kind of the loose edges, right? Like, I will move from zone to zone and I will find, you know, the first active panel that I can see there. I'm like, oh, this has blankety blank aspect to it, but like nothing has taught me that bit of vocabulary yet, so like I probably shouldn't be here yet. But when I make inroads, I will go until I get stumped, and I'm like, you know what, I'm not gonna play anymore because I have this written down on some graph paper, and I just need to put this down, and I'm gonna come back. And what it's led to is playing this game about 20 minutes at a time.
Okay. Do you find yourself saying, like, when you start to play through, like, I want to go to this spot on the map and just explore it? Or how do you handle the 20 minutes?
Usually what happens is I'll pick up where I left off, and I will try and take a second look at a thing that stumped me once before, and then I'll just look around for whatever's most attractive within eyesight. Really,
there's a lot of attractive things in the game.
Oh, it's absolutely stunning. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some of those attractive things, like, they're not so much like they're not a place where you go and enter puzzles, but it's like a little navigation challenge for you to find like an audio log.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any favorite spots yet?
I really liked the sunken ship. That was pretty cool. That's one of those ones that's not like, hey, there are no puzzles here, but this is just a cool thing. The shadow forest is pretty cool too. Like the forest that's kind of dead off of the line of the river. That's pretty good. I'm less crazy about like the overt architecture, kind of side of it. Like, hey, here's a castle, la da da. But like the stuff where it's kind of like built into the landscape. That's what really kind of like does it for me.
Okay. Yeah.
How about you?
I'm kind of taken aback because it's like every area has a beauty of its own, you know? And like, so yeah, I mean, it's really tough to kind of compare regions. They're all very, very memorable, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
It sounds like a game that I will want to play soon.
Yeah.
One of the impressions I get of the island is it's almost like Earth scaled down. You know, it's like it's just like all this beauty from all these different places around the world just like crammed into one island.
All they're missing is like a snow level and a lava level. Like just in terms of like ridiculous biomes being next to each other. Uh-huh. Like it's a little bit like a Minecraft map. And yeah. So, you know, knowing that this is a thing that is probably ultimately going to zoom out from like this little panel grid level to, you know, like maybe the whole island is going to become one of these maze puzzles or something like that, and I have to, you know, solve that and
get a helicopter.
Yeah, or just kind of like there's a higher perspective, and what I'm doing is actually like activating different sections of the board, like, because I know all of that kind of like possibility space is in play. Until it's not, until it, you know, kind of contracts, until I hit the walls of what it actually is. Mm-hmm. Like I see those less as a contrivance and more as a set of visual cues that are kind of like trying to keep me penned in to say like, hey, as you're trying to find the solutions to these puzzles, like maybe stay roughly in this spot where the leaves are purple instead of brown. you know, because this is a way here. And that's, you know, almost like a Disneyland-esque way to divide stuff up where there are no real actual walls except where there are, but instead just kind of like subtle sound and visual design notes that let you know, like, hey, this set of puzzles in this area is about one particular thing. And if you can't recognize the language on the stop signs, you've probably gone too far in one direction or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like, what patterns have you noticed? Like, what's your takeaway on like the puzzles or like the macro puzzle?
Well, yeah, I was gonna say that's one thing that's nice is there is somewhere on the map a place where you can there's audio logs around the game, and there's also video logs around the game as well. And so a few of the video games video logs kind of describe, I think, what Jonathan Blow was intending for the game, kind of reflecting upon like humans' ability to problem solve and their ability to learn new things.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I really liked, or one observation I had, I think you mentioned something about it before, where it's like, okay, I could brute force this puzzle if I wanted to. And in reflecting about it, it's like that's something a computer could do very easily as well. Like, mm-hmm. in terms of so specifically with one of the puzzles where it looks like a cube at an angle, you know, like where it's like, you have, it's like six equilateral triangles.
Yeah, like corner front. Yeah.
Yeah. So specifically with that puzzle, that was one where I actually went through, and I think for the first puzzle, I went through and brute forced it because there were a limited number of options. I think there were like 36 options that you could do. And I solved it, but then it goes to the next puzzle. It's like, I have like, no idea how to solve this one. And so now
it's like the next puzzle is like, what did you learn?
Like, yeah, exactly. You're like, show me that you really learned it. It's a lot of the puzzles are very much like homework, you know, it's like, did you actually do this problem? You know, but, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, so a human cannot brute force it as easily as a computer, but a human can pick up the patterns of the game and they can notice context clues and figure it out from there. And that's something that a computer has a really hard time doing. So, yeah, I don't know. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've had a couple of those eureka moments. Like, it's immensely satisfying to kind of take one of those where, like, I realize that I'm brute forcing it, step away from it, and come back, and then just, like, my first or second try, I've got it. Like, yeah. Those are immensely satisfying, and, like, you know, I'm patient about this. Like, I kind of feel like, you know, I'm not playing this for a show. Like I said, it's not a project like a bunch of other projects would, you know, like a bunch of other games I would play specifically for this show would be. Like, I need to play enough of it so I have something to talk about when I bring it to the show.
Mm-hmm.
I've said pretty much everything that I want to say about it, I think, unless there is some kind of like massive change to it. And so recognizing that there isn't an external pressure and that this is something I can do for 20 minutes and each day until I'm done with it, or until I stop getting those kind of like satisfying the satisfying little dopamine squirts, then that is fine. And I don't know if that's the way it was intended to be experienced, like, or if I'm kind of going against the idea of the design, but like, it seems like one of those things where people banging their heads against it aren't doing themselves any favors.
Yeah.
How so? The this is probably a question that is fraught with spoilers, so feel free to defer.
Mm-hmm.
How can you tell that you are close to the end?
I mean, so there's a marker every time you complete an area, more or less, right?
Are those like octagonal obelisks that pop up?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's only so many of those that can be on the map. And so after a certain point, there might be, you know, I could only be halfway through the game maybe, but then I guess that would make for a lot of obelisks, I guess. I guess there are other context clues too. I guess there are other small, like subtle clues to kind of show your pace in the game. So assuming that the island is the entire map for the game, then I would pick myself somewhat close to the end, but I would say end of like main branch, but then auxiliary puzzles, I'm probably further behind in. So
okay,
maybe a third or halfway through.
I know from reading stuff that you do not have to solve every puzzle in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So
I could believe that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm curious because, so there's like, Yeah, there's kind of like, you can think of the game like the Riddler's Challenge in Batman, right? But then within that, there's like even smaller, more obscure puzzles throughout the game, right? And so after finding a couple of those, it kind of, it's interesting because it kind of makes you wonder where the edge of the game is. Because it's so I found, you know, the base puzzles and I found the meta puzzles, but I don't know if there are any meta puzzles or not. So maybe that's what the game commentary is. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Jala, we haven't thrown to you in a little while, like as an outsider, like what part of the Witness experience is just like completely unclear to you that also you're not worried about, you know, having spoiled for you as you go in?
No, there's nothing that's unclear to me. I just know that this sounds like a game that I will need to play because of the type of game that it is. It is open world. It has puzzles and things in it. It looks shiny. There are things about it that I need to go and look at myself.
Playing it, I think, is very akin to doing your math homework in high school.
And I liked doing that. Like,
Huh. Yeah, I'm not saying that in a bad way, but I know that some people might not enjoy this game, and I could understand why.
And Jonathan Blow hasn't been doing himself any favors with that. Like when he came out and said, I want to make games for people who read Gravity's Rainbow. So like, okay, you want to make games for people who read like a really popular book that by an author who like smart people like to say they've read. Okay, cool. It's like, just come out and say this game isn't for everybody and I'm fine with that. Like, yeah. I don't mean to like fucking be your PR police or whatever, but there's definitely a less horrible way to say what you tried to say. I don't know. I dig it. It's good.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I'll ask you more questions off air, I think, because there's a couple of things I want to know. But yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we'll save that for after, and that may not be broadcast. So
yeah,
I think that is that's about it for the grind. Are you all? Oh, did you have another one?
I do have one small one.
Oh,
I have,
got one for the buzzer. Do it.
I've continued playing Until Dawn. I got past the point that I was at last week. It's gotten much more enjoyable. I would officially like recommend this game if you liked Heavy Rain, if you liked the genre of like teen horror movies, I think you would enjoy this movie just as much as Heavy Rain.
I need to just like pick a weekend and do it.
It's good. I mean the same sort of satisfaction you get out of a really good like teen horror movie, you'd probably get out of this.
Yeah, I like a teen horror movie.
There's a couple of campy parts or whatever, but I suppose that kind of comes with territory.
Yeah, I don't mind camp, so.
Okay. Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah, it's enjoyable.
Cool, yeah, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Also, I forgot to give hand apps to David Petroco, who is the one who bought me the Beginner's Guide, because that was also another one of those games that I needed to play. So, thank you, David. I didn't forget that you bought it for me. It just came a little belated. I'm sick.
Yeah, no, it is a wonderful excuse. Okay, now are we ready to button it up?
Mm-hmm.
No, nobody. Yay! Nobody inhaled sharply, so I assume. So thank you so much everybody for listening to level number 137. I'm going to use this admin time to reiterate our iTunes review challenge. You can probably get some old last generation games from us. Just make sure that you don't just grab a screen cap of a review that was already there, because I read them all. I know that they're there, but actually grab it while it's in progress and send it over and we will work it out. Please allow some time for that, because logistics are hard to work out on stuff. So, but yeah, that is something that we're going to do. Also, in the notion of sending stuff away, we have that P.O. box. It is duckfeed.tv or Cole Ross at P.O. box 27105, Cincinnati, Ohio 45227. I didn't set it up for this purpose, but somebody sent me a toy. Somebody sent me a there's no name on it. It just says Slack channel. So I guess everybody on Slack sent a Bluetooth controller for Apple TV and iOS devices, which is pretty cool. So I may check that out and see I'm waiting for the ability to install the emulator, which is going to be real soon. But thank you, whoever sent that in. That is much appreciated.
Nice.
Yeah.
And also, if you're going to do that, again, that is not for toys, although I appreciate it. Send some like postcards and stuff. I want to get some like writings and things. But if you do send something like that, include a note so I know who it's from. Yeah. I think that's it. Aside from the usual stuff, the iTunes reviews are there. Am I missing anything, you two?
I think that's it.
That's all. Right.
So I've been Cole Ross, at Cole Ross on Twitter.
Always Jalachan in all the places.
Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And until next time, stick around for some titles. Okay, who's got one to throw in?
I've got a couple.
Okay.
I've got Resident Huh.
Okay.
And The Day Cole Died.
Okay.
I have Send the Nazi to the Sniper, Forever Not Alone, and Chrono Trigger Warning.
Okay. Okay. I have Temporary Noncombatant, Find a Torso, Jala. I wrote it down as our resident, huh?
Okay.
So it doesn't come across as a Resident Evil thing. Mm-hmm. And then I also had Chrono Trigger Warning. I think Chrono Trigger Warning has to be it because we hit it real hard.
Yeah.
And also it alludes to the multiplayer.
The terrible, terrible.
Yeah.
Only sad, not terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not
cathartic,
not qualitative. Yeah.
No. There was a lot of cathartic and stuff because I had all these sad games I played too. What's up with all this sad stuff? I mean, really?
I mean, it's still I'm winter. About,
yeah, right. I guess.
Yeah.
The days are getting longer though. The
true.
Spring will be here.
Yeah, and it's warmed up at least. Yeah.
The groundhog did not see its shadow for the first time in like what since like the what was it the 18th time total since they started doing that.
Like, I don't know.
Whatever. Anyway, there's no damn shadow.
And I forget what that means. So
that means that there's going to be an early spring. No more winter.
Oh, cool. Not that we had a winter, but
yeah.
Cool.
Don't say that to any of the people who were stuck in the blizzards.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. Sorry about that. Didn't mean to do that. Didn't mean to.
Shout outs to all my snow day peeps.
Yeah. Almost that happened over a weekend. I hope everybody was okay.
Yeah.